Hey there, it's Melissa Brunetti, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Karma podcast.
Hey there, Karma crew. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Mind Your Own Karma, The Adoption Chronicles. Today, I have an adoptee guest, Monique Pengari, and let me tell you a little bit about Monique. She is an MED, SEP, is a certified trauma psychotherapist, educator, supervisor, trainer, and survivor of mother-infant separation and adoption trauma. She was born in Australia in 1972 at the height of the forced adoption era. Relinquished at birth and adopted at 6 weeks of age, she grew up in a family with two older adopted siblings. As a result of this complex experience, along with the roller coaster of four search and reunion journeys, early pregnancy and parenting, and now estrangement from multiple family members, she has now come out of the closet again to open up the discussion about the detrimental impacts of the relinquishment wound on the lives of adopted people. Monique was driven to study psychology and psychotherapy to try to make sense of something no one was talking about. She has spent her 30-year career studying, integrating, and teaching others about the significance of relational attachment, the impacts of pre-verbal trauma, and the dynamics of families where relational attachment disruption has occurred. She now shares all that she's learned with other adoptees and those that love and support them. Here is part one of my interview with Monique. We are welcoming Monique to the show today. I am so excited about this conversation. We've been trying to get together forever and our schedules just kept not meeting. But I thought we would kind of start with talking about your adoption experience, and then we'll get into some of the healing modalities that you're offering. Great. So let's just jump right in, Monique, and tell us what you know about your relinquishment.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Well, I'm from Australia, so I was born in 1972, which in Australia was the height of the forced adoption era, which in America is similar to the baby scoop era, I guess. The same things were happening here that were happening over there. Mm-hmm. So I was born in Queensland, which is not going to be overly familiar to you, but which is where I live now, actually, in the same town. And my mother was 18 at the time. And so I was relinquished at birth and adopted 6 weeks later to my family that I grew up with. And that family had my mum and dad and two older brothers who were both adopted as well. So I was the third adoptee in the family. And they picked me up from the hospital and drove back to their hometown, which was probably about 6 hours away. Mm. And I grew up there. So I didn't know. Well, I found out I was adopted, I think, probably from the age of maybe about six, I'd say. I found out. I can remember them telling my parents telling us. They told us all at once.
Oh, wow.
We were driving in the car, actually, and it wasn't planned. I didn't think it was planned at all. We just happened to be driving on our yearly trip down south for our Christmas holidays, and we were driving through this town where I live now, and my dad just said, "Oh, this is where we got you from, Monique." And I didn't know what he meant. We were in the back seat, so we couldn't see their faces or anything. Mum and Dad were in the front. And then they just said, you guys were adopted. So that's how I found out. And
did you know what adoption was?
Not really. No, I knew it wasn't good at that point. I mean, I was so young, so obviously I don't remember a lot, but I don't remember there being much more conversation than that. And then just trying to work out what that meant as time went on. And I guess the way I worked that out was from family interactions. I had cousins the same age, or I had a cousin the same age as me. And they would make kind of not very nice comments, like, you know, you're not part of the family and things like that, I guess, growing up. So, yeah, I don't really know when it dawned on me what adoption was or what it meant, but I guess slowly I worked out. I knew that I wasn't part of the family. That was probably the main understanding that I had as a young child.
Did your brothers find out at that same time, or did they already know they were adopted?
I don't think they already knew. I'm pretty sure we all found out at the same time. Yeah,
oh,
it's
wow.
Not a conversation we've had, actually.
How old were they?
Well, that would 2 years. There's 2 years between each of us. So if I was six, my other brother would have been 10, and then my other brother would have been about eight. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So why did your adoptive parents decide to adopt?
Well, my mum had five miscarriages and wasn't able to birth a child. So she was able to get pregnant, but not able to keep the pregnancy in long enough. I think the last pregnancy she had was 21 weeks. And then she lost the baby at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty traumatic.
Yeah,
so, what,
so pretty traumatic
yeah.
for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was life like growing up in your adoptive family?
Well, I guess on the outside looking in, we looked like a normal family. We lived in the same town the whole time. Went to the same school. We didn't move around. My parents stayed together. But I guess inside the family, I think adoption definitely was playing its part, but not in ways that anybody could verbalize. It wasn't seen as a problem. I assume my parents were told just, you know, go home and this is your family now. So there was no adoption awareness conversations or parenting in that sense. That wasn't really around, I guess, back in those days. So is my parents had problems in their relationship. They fought all of the time. As I got older and started my career, I've worked in child protection and with domestic violence, things like that. So I think over the years, more so as an adult, when I looked back, I could see that there was some DV growing up. And yeah, there were things that happened that I didn't understand at the time, but that I knew weren't very good. It was a very unhappy kind of family. And we were so different from each other, my brothers and I, just completely different personalities. So my father was very much male, wanted kids who were into sport, that kind of thing. Neither of my brothers were into sport. And neither of them were very academic either. So I was the daughter. I did pretty well at school. I was fairly sporty, but because I was a female, that wasn't very important to him. So, I think for me it was a lot of trying to fit in but not really being able to fit in to the family. I do remember quite often, like, walking along the street and people just looking at me and saying, smile. So I must have looked pretty miserable, I think. I do remember also I would cry myself to sleep a lot at night and just wonder where my mother was. I think as a young person, that memory sticks with me, that whilst we weren't talking about adoption, there's that hidden life, I guess, of the adoptee that you don't put voice to until you're much, much older.
Yeah.
But for me, I was always wondering why had I been adopted? Why did she leave? And I know I had a feeling quite often of just not wanting to be in that family. I didn't feel connected to anybody, really. I didn't feel love from anybody. So my teen years, I know my parents were very strict. They wouldn't let me kind of do anything. They'd let my brothers do things, but they wouldn't really let me do anything, which led to me being a little bit rebellious, I think. I would sneak out sometimes and not overly rebellious. I didn't get into drugs or anything, but I certainly started experimenting with alcohol fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my first boyfriend at 16, which was a pretty tumultuous relationship, but I ended up falling pregnant. So I think that was a big shifting point for everyone in the family in a lot of ways.
And you were 16 when you got pregnant?
17. Yeah, I was 17. Not long after my birthday, a few months after my 17th birthday, and then my son was born before my 18th birthday. Yeah, so there was pressure to not keep him, particularly from the doctor, that when I found out I was pregnant, went to the doctors. The doctor did a blood test, came back, said you're pregnant, and didn't really look at me. She just pulled out her pad and started writing a referral for an abortion.
Wow.
I can remember just being in shock, really, and then walking out of there. My mum was with me, and I walked out of there and said, I'm not getting an abortion. That's not happening. Their mum panicked. She's like, oh, God, how are we going to tell your father? Anyway, they got over it, and I went through the pregnancy, and he was born. And then he just became the love of everybody. he became the central focus point. Actually, that year, my parents nearly broke up because my mum found out that my father had been having an affair for about 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So they were going through their own major dramas. And then when my son came along, it just kind of brought everybody back together. They had a central focus point, and he just became very much their central focus point. He probably still is to this day. Yeah.
Did you have any more kids?
Yes, I did. So I had him at 17, and then I had my second son at 29. I was 29. So there's a 12-year gap between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
you mentioned that you had thought about your birth mother growing up. Did you ever decide to search?
Yeah, I did. I found my birth mother a few years after I had my son. I was determined as a child to find her as soon as I turned 18. So having then had my son at 17, that kind of swayed me for a little while. And then at 21, I can remember chatting to a friend, a close friend, and I don't know if I'd ever really spoken to anybody about being adopted before, but I shared that with her, and I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to go about doing this. So she said, why don't you just go and look through the phone books? And I was like, oh, well, you know, she's probably married by now. I did somehow manage to get my identifying information. I don't know how I worked out how to do that.
So you had her name then?
Yes, I had her name. I think I got that at 18, actually. A piece of information I didn't share was when we were kids, and whenever mum would go out to go shopping or something and leave us kids at home, my brother would get into her drawers in her bedroom, and he found our adoption paperwork. So I think I was being maybe about 12 at the time, probably. And their letters were very short, just said, you know, we have a male child available for adoption. Whereas my letter, maybe because I was a little bit old, a bit younger than them, so further on, it had a good 3 or 4 paragraphs in it, and it had things like, you know, your mother has dark hair and dark eyes, and And your father has blonde hair and blue eyes. Not your father, but the father has blonde hair, blue eyes, and he was a carpenter. And so I had this information from young that I'd only read on that piece of paper. Nobody had ever spoken to me about it. So I think that also fueled this desire to meet my parents as soon as I could. I think I was convinced that there'd been some big mistake and she really wanted me. And as soon as we met each other, it would be, you know, rainbows and we'd be reunited and it would be happily ever after. That was my fantasy, right. I think.
Well, you said you had four search and reunion journeys. So tell us about that then.
Well, I met her when I was 21. I managed to find her through the phone book and get a phone number and call her. And she was living in Perth, which is on the other side of Australia. And within a couple of weeks, I think maybe it was even the next week, she flew over to meet me. And at that time, unbeknownst to me, within that week of me contacting her, she reached out to and contacted who she said was my birth father. And he happened to live a few hours away from me, maybe about 6 hours away from me, and which is here where I live now, where I was born. He was living there. And he had recently come out of a divorce and he had two children. So he drove up to my hometown. She flew over from Perth and they met each other for the first time since I had been conceived.
Oh, wow.
And she said, this is, you know, she told him before he drove up that I had a baby. I adopted her out. This is your daughter. So I didn't know he was coming that weekend. So I kind of got a bit of a double whammy of meeting both of them. So I was 21 at that point. So she had been talking about moving to live closer to me. I was about to move up to Townsville, which is North Queensland, about 12 hours away from where I live to go to university. And she was going to move there to support me. I was a single mum. And instead what happened is he flew over to Perth. They got married within 6 months.
Wow.
Started a life together. And then they moved back over here to the Sunshine Coast. I had moved to Townsville, so we weren't living anywhere near each other. So I guess in my much younger, immature mind back then, that felt like a second rejection to me in the sense that she then chose that relationship. She was prepared to move, but she chose to move to be with him. So we kind of fell out for a little bit. And then fast forward 10 years, I was pregnant with my second son. And within that 10 years, I had met that man that she said was my father. He had two children and I had gotten really close with his daughter, who I thought was my sister. And she, while I was pregnant, so I was 28 at this stage, she said to me, you know, my mum is not sure if dad is your dad. And I said, what? Wow. And she said, well, your mum was dating somebody else at the time. And, you know, mum's always been a bit unsure about that. And she was having her 21st birthday at the time. I was about 8 months pregnant, I think. And I went to that birthday party. I met her mum for the first time. And she shared with me the whole story of who my mum was dating back then. And so that led me on a bit of a DNA search, and I was able to, well, through them, I was able to get the man that she was dating's name. Again, through the phone book, I kind of tracked down family members, and he was in Thailand. And this was before the days of easy DNA access. So yeah. I asked him if he would do a DNA test. He agreed. He was really happy to hear from me, and he was more than happy to do a DNA test. So I had to contact my birth mother again after having had no contact for quite some time, and asked if they would go halves in paying for the DNA test because it was $2,000 at the time. And my
Oh,
husband and I
dang. That's a lot.
had a mortgage. Yeah, it was a lot. We had a mortgage. We were just kind of starting out, and that caused a lot of drama. She didn't want to do that. It took about 6 months before she agreed to do that. And she did decide to pay half. And so I got the DNA test done, found out, in fact, he was my birth father. And the man that she had introduced me to 10 years earlier, whose children I had met and formed relationships with, his mother I had met, I thought she was my grandmother and auntie. So I'd had 10 years of forming relationships with these people and then found out that that was not my biological family at all. So that started
How did that
another
affect you? I
year.
mean,
Oh,
how did that
yeah.
affect the guy who you thought was your father? I mean, how
Well,
did that?
it was interesting. I didn't ever feel a real connection to him anyway. So that was interesting. But it really impacted me because I was very close to his daughter and we used to hang out quite a lot. She lived just near me. And yeah, I think I went into a major depression actually at that time. My son was born and yeah, that was the beginning of my 30s. And I think that's the beginning of kind of when I really came out of the fog. Like, I got very depressed at that time and then started reading quite a lot. I think that's when I first read The Primal Wound, and then Journey of the Adopted Self by Bettye Jean Lifton. Started reading that at that time. I remember sharing this stuff with my adoptive parents who were just not interested at all. So I felt very, very alone on that journey. So it was really full of ups and downs because my birth father, who I found out was my birth father, he was in Thailand, but he flew back over to Australia maybe another year later. And but in the meantime, he had two children, two daughters, and both my sisters, but one of them was living 15 minutes away from
Oh
me.
my gosh.
So I reached out to her and she was again very welcoming. She was really lovely and we caught up a few times. She also had a young child the same age as my young son. So we had a bit in common and she shared a lot about him with me and a bit about their upbringing. And then he flew over from Thailand and I got to meet him. He was just lovely. There's a whole awful story really about how my birth mother treated him because his name was on the birth certificate. His name was on my birth certificate. He was the one with blonde hair and blue eyes and a carpenter, whereas the other man that she'd introduced me to had dark hair and dark eyes. And I have dark hair and dark eyes. So I was confused. I can remember asking her, why did it say this person had blonde hair and blue eyes? So that kind of made sense eventually when I met him because my older son also has blonde hair and blue eyes. So that was a big part of why I went searching for the DNA because my son had blonde hair and blue eyes, very, very blue eyes. And I just assumed, oh yeah, that matches up from the birth, from the that letter, that identifying letter. But then when I met the man she said was my father, and he didn't have that. That didn't make sense. So when I got the DNA evidence, that all kind of fell into place and made sense then. Yeah, and then I guess a couple of years later, I met my grandmother, so his mother, and yes, I met her 3 weeks before she passed away. And again, she was also really beautiful, very open to connecting with me. But she passed away 3 weeks later. And my grandfather had passed away also before I met him. So I ended up at the funeral of one of them. I can't remember which one. And at the end of the funeral, photos and things were being passed around a table and lots of conversation was happening. And somebody said that she was Aboriginal or may have been Aboriginal. And for me, Aboriginality was when I graduated from university, I went to teach in an Aboriginal community, and that was a life-changing experience for me. And I just had always been really interested in Aboriginal culture and Aboriginal people. And so I knew a lot about the history of Stolen Generation in Australia. And that led to a whole string of curiosity about my heritage.
Yeah.
So the fourth reunion, I guess, was one of reconnecting with that culture and that country. So we have an organisation here in Australia called Link Up, and they support people from Stolen Generation to reconnect with family members. And whilst I wasn't a member of Stolen Generation, I fit their criteria because I was adopted. So they spent a couple of years gathering research for me.
Nice.
Yeah, so they ended up giving me a file this thick, like really, really thick, with lots and lots of family information that proved my Aboriginal heritage. And then they offered a reunion. And given that I did know who my family was and they had passed, they said, well, you can do a reunion to country. So last year, they I got to do a reunion to country, which was back to Wiradjuri country, where my Aboriginal ancestors are from.
Wow.
So that was my fourth reunion. So, yeah, the reunion roller coaster is very familiar
yes.
to me.
Are you still in contact with your biology, or?
Well, my birth mother and I don't have contact now. She still lives in Perth. It's been a very tumultuous relationship. I've known her longer now as an adult than I didn't know her as a child. And it was very fraught with a lot of anger and push and pull, late night texting. I guess that's the thing that stands out the most in my mind is 2 a.m., 3 a.m. texts that didn't make any sense. And could go from deep grief, like, where are you? I miss my baby, to anger, all in a matter of minutes, really.
Yeah. Wow.
So eventually I showed these texts to some friends, and they said, do you think she's been drinking? And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So those messages would come every sometimes 3 months, sometimes 6 months, till eventually a year or so ago, I asked her to stop sending them, and if she wanted to have contact with me, to please phone me during daylight hours. And I haven't heard from her again. So, so we don't have contact now, but I did have contact with my birth father on and off. And then he passed away in January last year. And I got to be there with him. I think he was holding on really for me to get there. And then he passed away about 4 or 5 hours after I arrived, and I was the only one with him. So
wow.
Yeah, that was pretty powerful.
How has what's you know the ups and downs of your reunion, how has that impacted you?
Oh my God. hugely. It's been huge. I feel really good these days. Like, there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel. I don't feel majorly distressed by anything, but certainly my 30s and 40s, particularly my 30s, I'd say, there was so much distress, and I just felt so alone. There was no support, really, that I just didn't have any support, and I didn't have any friends that understood what I was going through. I was married at the time, and I had a very, very beautiful, supportive husband, but he also had no idea. We had no language for what was happening. I drank a lot. I probably drank my way through my 30s and 40s. not really connecting those two things together, but made a lot of sense of that in recent years. And so alcohol was probably a big feature of helping me cope throughout that time. And it's been a lot of reckoning, I would say, going back in time. Another thing that happened, I guess, in my primary years was one of my older brothers we were sexually abused by a cousin growing up, who actually said, you know, out loud to me, you know, that he thought this was okay because we weren't biologically related. So dealing with, I guess, childhood sexual assault, adoption, secrecy of adoption where nobody would talk about it, the alcohol related to my biological mother and the impact of her lack of healing, my lack of healing over the years. I went through a divorce in my late 30s, which again at the time I didn't really see was related to my adoption, but now that, you know, it's so obvious to me how much that was related to needing to go and find myself, really. And then my 40s was a really big journey of really coming out of what I had known to be this life I lived with my adoptive parents, still kind of very close, and my children. And my adoptive parents were very coveting of my children. I found it very difficult to build my own relationship, particularly with my oldest son. So I had to leave and kind of get away from them. So I raised my younger son on my own, really, without too much of their support. And I'm estranged from my adoptive family now, so I don't really have contact with adoptive family at all, and I don't have contact with my birth mother. I do have contact with my two sisters. We had more contact last year because my father had passed away, but one lives in Melbourne and the other one lives about 40 minutes away from me now. So we catch up every now and then.
Do you feel comfortable talking about your estrangement from your adoptive family? Like what happened?
Yeah. Well, my brother, the one that was 2 years older than me, he had a really difficult life. He was also the one that was sexually abused growing up. So we both experienced that in childhood. Neither one of us knew that that was happening. And then when he was 18, he came out, so he was gay. My adoptive father was not happy with that, you know. I guess they just didn't bond. None of us really bonded. But of course, it was the only family we had, so we would go back to them over and over again. But over the years, a lot of things happened in the family to him that I found abhorrent, really. And so he never really had a relationship with anybody. He got into drugs and alcohol in his 20s. He kind of in the 90s, which was when he was in his 20s, is when a lot of his friends had died from AIDS. Mm-hmm. He was pretty prominent in the queer world. He was living a very fast life, I guess, and with trauma that was not diagnosed or understood in any way. He and I used to talk a lot about finding his birth family, and he really wanted to, and he did manage to get his original birth certificate. So he had the name of his mother, and he would cry a lot. He and I would talk about it a lot, and he would cry a lot. And he told my parents that he wanted to find them. And of course, my father said some pretty cruel things to him, like, why would they want to meet you? You're a mess. You need to clean up your life. So he never went down that path of looking. So that that never really got resolved for him. And once he did give up hard drugs, he then took up alcohol, and he passed away 4 years ago this month. Last week, actually, was his the fourth 4 year anniversary of his death. So he died from a heart attack, and he basically drank himself to death. So the day that he passed away, I found out in the morning, and I had a day full of clients, and I went to work, saw my clients that day. It was also the day that we found out about COVID. So the rest of the world was kind of on fire. And I just found out that my brother had died. And as soon as I finished with clients that day, I rang my mum and just, you know, how are you doing? And was pretty empathic. And she then told me that they'd booked flights to travel to where he was living for a funeral. And she didn't include me in the flight. So she got flights for my other brother and his wife and her and dad. And so I asked about why, you know, what happened? Did you get a ticket for me? And she immediately went into defense mode, and that turned into a lot of really awful things that she said to me. And I remained as calm as I could and said, "Mum, you know, my brother's just died, your son has just died. I think we need to stop this conversation." Anyway, it kept going and kept going. And I said, "I'm going to hang up the phone now." And then I did hang up the phone, and I have never seen or heard from them again.
So you didn't go to the funeral.
I didn't go to the funeral. I felt that it would be a complete farce. I felt like my older brother was going to do the eulogy. He didn't know anything about my brother. My parents were going to be there grieving and mourning when I felt like they were the main part of the problem as to why, you know, he'd lived the life that he did. So I didn't go. I had a beautiful little ceremony myself, acknowledging him and his life. So
How do
that was the
you
estrangement.
deal with all of that? How did you deal with it? What helped you through? Or have you totally dealt with it? That's a lot.
It's a good question. I ask myself the same question a lot. How the hell did I make it through? You know, I didn't really have people in my life that understood adoption. I didn't really understand it. I think I just muddled my way through, really. I had a friend actually who I that month I actually moved into a house we were house sharing, and she was really beautiful. She That day of the funeral, she said to me, "Come on, let's go. We're going to go for a hike." And we went up into the hinterland hiking for the day, and just, you know, made that an honoring of him. And I feel a bit teary now just thinking about that. And I guess I just kind of got on with life. I think he'd had such a hard life that whilst I was sad, I could feel that it was relief for him to be gone. So, in that way, I guess it was kind of a bit easier knowing that he was not in pain anymore.
Well, what advice would you have somebody for an adoptee that's contemplating reunion? What do you think are some things that they should think about beforehand?
Well, I think in this day and age, there's so much more support than what there was back then. I had no real access to anything or anyone. But a few years ago, I managed to get a job in an organisation here in Queensland called PASC, which stands for Post-Adoption Support Queensland. So I worked for 2 years with PASC, which was working specifically with mostly adoptees, but also birth mothers and adoptive parents. And through that role, I started to learn about how much support there is. So that's a free service that's available in Queensland, and there are free services in other states. So if anyone was in Australia, they could contact PASC and have free counselling and free mediation, where mediators in that role, or that role I used to have, and the people that are in those roles now, they will search for you and they will make initial contact for you and mediate between that contact to have the best outcome possible. So I would recommend anybody contact those services if you're thinking about reunion. I would also say don't necessarily rush into it. Do a lot to prepare yourself. Not that you can ever be fully prepared for what's right. coming, but I, when I think, you know, I was 21, I had no idea what was about mm-hmm. to come, no idea whatsoever. And I've heard so many adoptive people's stories these days that, you know, there's so many variations of what can happen when we go through reunion. So I would say work on getting a good support network. Have a counsellor that you really trust to support you through the... I always think of reunion as an internal journey and an out journey. There's two journeys happening at the same time. So that we go on the search, like the physical search for information, DNA testing, getting records, looking up phone books, stalking on Facebook. That's kind of the external journey. But then there's the internal emotional roller coaster that happens as well, of reaching out, maybe not finding somebody, or do I contact this person on Facebook? Do I not? All of that internal distress that can happen needs support. Mm-hmm. So get as much support as possible around you. Read books. There's a new book's just come out called Adoption Unfiltered. Highly, highly recommend that book. It's really good. And the other thing I would say is have an understanding of the phases of coming out of the fog, and recognizing that where you are in your journey of coming out of the fog around understanding adoption might be very different to where your biological family is at, because we're all at different stages of coming out. So I think having a conceptual understanding that if it's your birth mother you're seeking, she may still be in the fog, you know, with an idea of, I did the best thing for you.
Yeah.
Or she may have done her own work and, you know, be further along the journey than where you are. So I think when there's not really an understanding of where you can, how you can both be at different stages of that understanding, the fantasy comes crashing down. So yeah, I definitely went into reunion with some fantasy that was undone fairly quickly. And I wish I had done better preparation. A couple of years ago during COVID, I joined a writing group called Flourish. And it was a group of adoptees. There was about 20 of us, I'd say. And we met every week for 2 hours for 12 months.
Wow.
So every week for 12 months. And we were given writing prompts and we would write for 10, 15 minutes. And then we'd come back to the group and everybody read out what they had written. And we did that week after week, and we just became really, really close, mm-hmm. As a close-knit group. And that was 2021. And in fact, I met my partner through that. I've been over to the States about 3 or 4 times now and met up with people that were in the group, because most people in the group were from America. There was only 2 of us from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have come to see through that group is there's two or three people in our group who hadn't been through reunion. And in the last 2 years since our group, they have moved into a reunion place. And they have just done an incredibly beautiful job. Like, they've ended up having really beautiful reunions because they were so, they I'm not saying they were easy reunions at all. They definitely had an emotional roller coaster, but they felt like they were really well supported, like from the members of our group, from therapists that they were able to access. They did a lot of therapy beforehand and they've had really beautiful outcomes. And I've got to say, for someone my age, looking at these women in their 30s and 40s going through that now with so much support, I'm just, a part of me feels a little bit like, oh gosh, it could have been so different had I had that support. So yeah, I would say get an adoption competent therapist and talk to your friends, talk to people around you, bring them along on the journey with you. Don't do it in silence.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed this part one with Monique telling her adoption story. Next week, we will dive into some healing therapies that you may not have heard about before that is kind of groundbreaking that she's using and is proving to be very effective on adoptees. But first, I want to talk about some of the things that she was talking about today about reunions. You know, they're so tricky, and there's so much to contemplate when you are going into reunion. And so kind of in a nutshell, some advice from me would be just go slow. Go slow in the reunion process. I know it can be exciting and you want to know things, but just like Monique's story, there's so many twists and turns. So expect the unexpected. Even if things seem to be going smoothly, just go slow. Be kind to yourself, be kind to those around you. You're all coming from your own experiences, your own traumas. And so just be compassionate and kind to yourself. Get a adoptee informed therapist, somatic, talk therapy, both. That is something that you really need to have in place probably before you start the reunion process. Also, get networked with other adoptees and have some people that you can bounce your adoptee experience and your reunion experience off of. Someone that understands where you're coming from and just all the intricacies of what you're feeling and going through. So like I said, next week we will be diving into some therapies that may not be something that you've heard about before that are pretty effective for adoptees. So stay tuned for next week. Tune in and we will be talking to Monique one more time about these therapies. As always, take what you need and leave what you don't. And always remember to mind your own karma. I will see you next time.